accession number 27759, reel 3.
John Leopard, reel 3. I suppose this would have been quite prevalent at that time, TB. You know, you were saying the place you were taken earlier in the interview. Could you continue with what you were telling me? You know, that they gave you just 3 months to live.
Well, they said to their aunt that they were put into an isolation ward initially. Because they said that unfortunately it only gave them 3 months. I had the option to sit in there by the bed and all the other paraphernalia, but I apparently responded very quickly to the medication that they gave me, and within the 3 months they transferred me to the main ward. They said that they were absolutely amazed at the recovery. Apparently, they killed off the TB quite quickly, but it left me with a large hole the size of a dollar in one lung, and the other lung was like a sponge, absolutely peppered with holes. But going into the main ward, it was quite an experience. The first thing that had happened there, they said that right, you're going to have a shaving. I was only 12 at the time, but I had a little bit of fluff on my upper lip, and I had to start shaving. The other thing was, all the men in the ward were given a Guinness or a Mackeson, and they couldn't see why I couldn't have it. They had their ulterior motive, hoping that I would pass it on. Unfortunately for them, I didn't.
You've got a taste for it, did it?
I got a taste for the Guinness, yes. I still like my Guinness, yes. Unfortunately, in those days, and that a lot of people died with TB, and the ward quite frequently, every day or two, that one of the patients would be wheeled out. One morning, I woke up and screens were put round beds on both sides of me, and it was an outcry from the other patient, said, "Look, this is not on. That a young boy is put in a ward where people are dying all around him." And I was transferred to a hospital or sanatorium in Brentwood, Essex, which I stayed there for 3.5 years. We were put on verandas. I mean, in those days, they used to believe in plenty of fresh air. I was stuck on a veranda with like chicken wire in the front, and there were canvas blinds that they used to pull across. Well, in the 3.5 years I was there, they pulled these canvas blinds on two occasions. One occasion when we were flooded, it was a very bad thunderstorm, and the other occasion is when we woke up with cold feet. When we looked down, there was at least 2 inches of snow on the bottoms of the beds.
It was pretty harsh treatment, wasn't it?
It was very harsh treatment. Needless to say, when I came out of hospital, as a young man, 17, I used to walk around in winter with just a shirt and a sports jacket on, when everybody else were muffled up. And people just couldn't understand why I couldn't feel the cold. But eventually, after about 20-odd years, I began to feel the cold.
Going back to the war, or the, towards the end of the war, do you remember D-Day, the invasion of France? You know, did that make an impact on you?
Yes, I do. I do remember on that occasion. I remember also VE Day. because my aunt and uncle and that were the people that organised the majority of the celebrations and the area that we were in. My uncle and aunt and that were well known in the area for organising different things, and they organised street parties in two or three areas, which were very popular, and which they were asked to do for a number of years afterwards.
What was a street party like? Could you describe what happened?
Well, literally they used to put barriers up, sealing off the roads. Very few cars in those days. People would come out and with tables of various kinds. And mainly it was the children that were all sat around all these tables, and the adults all would stand around. And we would have all hats, plenty of Union Jacks. And in those days it was plenty of jellies. And we had ice creams, which was unheard of for a long time during the war. And also we had some funny fruits called bananas. And bananas we'd never seen. I mean, some of the children were frightened of them. They didn't want to eat them. And we used to have games, competitions, people dressing up, and thoroughly good time. Of an evening, of course, it used to go on with the adults. They used to have a dance. And some people playing various instruments. I remember my uncle and the cousin playing the old paper, a comb and paper, and a bass made out of a wooden box with a broom handle, and they used to strum it and to make a bass. And they used to do all kinds of things like this. There'd be one of our neighbours who used to play the violin, and another chap with a piano accordion. And we used to make our own music. It was very nice.
How did you feel when you knew war was over? Or the war in Europe?
War in Europe when that was over, yeah. So we, I think we were all very elated. We thought that, you know, we would be able to do a lot more. We were all looking forward to. All our holidays and things like this, because I remember going the first year after the war, going on our first holiday to Nine Ridges, and then followed that by going down to Littlehampton. And I do remember going to Madison's holiday camp. That was a holiday camp right near where there's a big old metal drum that they used to call Pluto. It's a drum that they used for running the cable out across the Atlantic during the war. That was still had barbed wire all around it.
And at Littlehampton?
This was at Dymchurch. This was at Dymchurch, where the camp was. And we used to play in the sand. It was lovely sand. And that's where they had the little Dymchurch railway. I always remember that one.
Your aunt and uncle, did they have other children?
Yes, they had two sons and a daughter. The eldest son was in Bomber Command.
Oh, they were grown up.
They were grown up, yeah.
Yes. And I wondered about, you know, finance for them. Did the government give them any contribution for looking after you and the people who were looking after your sisters as well?
Well, I do know that the Ford's Motor Company had a war chest that they, any orphans of their ex-employees, they gave a contribution. And also the Father's Regiment used to send some money. I don't think it was a great deal, but I do know the Ford's Motor Company paid for my aunt to dress me after I first went in there, and settlement sum, I think it was a grand sum of £12, which was a fair bounty in those days. I think an average man used to earn £5 or £6 a week at that time.
Did you continue?
I don't know what my aunt got from the government, if anything, at that time. But I do know that the regiment gave some. We had I don't remember her name, but I know it was a lady something, who was the commanding officer's wife of the Rifle Brigade. She used to come round periodically and see that we were being treated okay. And also the regiment, as I say, used to send a little bit of money.
But, so it was mainly your father's firm and his regiment that
kept an eye on us till we were 16, on my sisters as well. And we always used to have a Christmas card from the regiment every year till we were up about 16. And as I say, when I went into further education after a while.
Yes, you did explain that earlier. That was, you know, how they helped you then with your fees. Yes. Your war was a particularly brutal one, wasn't it, in as much that you lost your father and your mother. And I also think of those bombing experiences you had. You saw a lot of death and, experienced a lot of death as well, didn't you?
Well, I think this is quite normal with people that are living in London. People around the docks and places like that, they all experienced traumatic times. Different parts of Deptford, Bermondsey and places like that, that I heard of after the war. People's experiences there, and that was all very traumatic. Some far worse than anything that I had experienced.
Is that so? Yours wasn't an unusual.
No, I don't. Not at that time. No. Some people had a good war, if you could call it that. But there was a hell of a lot of people, and children especially, that went through far worse.
Must have been a very different childhood from children today. The childhood you endured during the war. I say endured, but you seem to have enjoyed it as well. It was a mix for you, wasn't
well,
it?
I think you remember the good parts, mostly, or try to remember the good parts. But it's funny enough, I always, from the age of 12, 13, people always considered me a lot older than I was. But whether it's experiences made me grow up, much sooner, I don't know. I always remember when I was in digs when I was 20, coming up 21, and I happened to mention to the landlady, oh, got a birthday next week. She said, how old are you then? I said, 21. She said, oh yeah, how many times have you been 21? I said, this is the first time. She said, first time? And anyway, I had to get my passport out to show her that I was 21. And she said, well, I'm sorry, John. She said, I thought you were at least 31. But, I've always seemed to be that much older. But funny enough, as the years went on, I must have started getting younger, because people say I don't look my age at the moment.
Just to do with maturity rather than appearance.
I think it was maturity, because I'm at the age of 18. I was very much into local politics. I wanted to change the world and everything else, but I went from being a socialist to being a conservative, and by the time I was 21 and I'd seen what politics were, I was absolutely sickened with it. And I must admit that very few politicians that I have any truck with. Most of them I find that the truth that where a lot of politicians are kind of is very something which they find very hard to tell. Yeah. But I've met one or two that believe in what they do and are honest, but the majority of them, I'm afraid, I don't have much truck with.
The fact that you lost both your parents in the war, although you went to a very good home, you know, with your aunt and uncle, but you were separated from your sisters. Yeah. Did it make a difference to your own attitude towards your family life and the children you have? Do you think the way you have fathered children, when you think about it, do you think it has affected that?
Well, we are very close family, and I'm very proud of both my children. But, they've done very well for themselves. I think probably I was brought up fairly strict, but I've been hopefully a good father. We've always tried to teach them right from wrong and all the rest of it, but I've always tried to give them a bit more than what I had, which I think most parents do, but without going overboard.
Do you find, you know, given your war experience, which, you know, still to me seems a very traumatic one, when you see pictures on television today of war zones and the children caught up in war, Iraq and Afghanistan, Bosnia,
yeah,
what have you,
yeah,
I wonder, you know, if you identify with those children.
In some occasions, I do. You know, in some incidents, I know what those kids are going through, what they're seeing. Of course, some of them, what you see these days, that are a lot worse than what we had to put up with. I mean, Iraq, you can't compare it with what we went through in London. I mean, it's far worse out there than what we ever experienced. But some of the places that I used to work when I was in London, all around St Paul's, it was just one massive bomb site. It makes you think, you know, and the people suffered that were there at the time.
But, well, I suppose they're pretty universal themes. You know, a lot of orphans in Iraq, aren't there, in other places?
Yes.
You went through very much. Mm. And they have loving extended families who look after them as well. So I would think.
Yeah, we were very lucky there. Mind you, there were times when, like all young boys, I used to play up at times. I was never an angel. And I used to get threatened with the army orphanage down at Dover. You'll end up there if you don't behave yourself. But it never happened.
Well, I'm very pleased for you, because thank you very much, John, for telling me about your wartime childhood. Thank you.
Thank you.